Okay, we just about to start the class. Hope everybody is doing well today. Alright, we just need a brief audio check before we start the class. Once you hear the audio, please just type in the bottom of your screen, audio okay. That'll let us know that you're picking up the audio fine. And today we're going to continue with the fundamentals of Judaism. We're basing this again on Maimonides. And that's in his Mishneh Torah. And we're going to go a little bit further into his next few laws. So we'll just start just momentarily. Okay, Sarah, good to see you. Lee, Jean, Nissim. Laura Kay in New York, nice to see you, Laura. Again, we're referring to Maimonides, the Yesodei HaTorah, which is the very first section of his Mishneh Torah. We're in chapter 1, and we're up to law number 4. That's Perek Aleph Halacha Dalet in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. Okay, so why don't we start? Looks like we have the audio confirmation. And just start 1 second. Okay. So what we're dealing with now is the next statement of Maimonides. We discussed his comments regarding God being the only true existence, the source of everything that's in the universe, and that even if everything in the universe were to be extinct, God would not be affected, and he would still continue. We also talked about the fact, which is where Maimonides is getting into now, and he's talking now in Halacha Das. Let me read you the next law. So he says, in the previous law, he ended off by saying that God's truth is unlike the truth of anything else which exists. And he elaborates, what does he mean that God's truth? Meaning that the fact that he exists. The truth is something, is the fact, you know, existence is synonymous with truth. In as much as something which is true, meaning it exists. It could be something which is metaphysical, it could be something which is physical. But the fact is that something which did not always exist, and that's everything except for God, does not have what we call essential existence. It has dependent existence. And this is the distinction that Maimonides is making, because in order to have correct knowledge of Torah and God, we have to have the right concepts regarding God, whatever is capable, you know, whatever is humanly possible. So he starts out by outlining the primary concepts that we can have regarding God. One primary concept he said already was that the concept of God's existence, he said in the first law, is the fundamental of all fundamentals, and also the pillar of all truths. That means to say that there's two realms in which God's truth is, I guess you could say, enacted, or plays a role. I mean, there's two realms. There's in terms of what's absolutely true, and that's, you know, anything about God, and that's regardless of creation being in existence or not. Anything true about God, it was true even prior to creation. And his act of creating the world did not have an effect on him and didn't make any principles regarding him any more true or less true. But then there's also the fact that after he created the world, then there's something called chachmos, there's something called sciences. And regarding those sciences, it's essential that one has a knowledge of God's existence if he's to arrive at any real truth in any given science. And we explained that last time. But what we showed is that there's two areas that Maimonides is referring to, and that's inasmuch as what's true regarding God, and that's regardless of whether or not the world exists. And then there's truths regarding the operation of the world. Now, I believe he goes on with the theme. Because look what he says now in law, in Halacha Daled. He says, that is which the prophet said. And he quotes, God is our God of truth, end quote. Meaning to say, when he's talking about that God exists without any need for anything else, and that his existence is his very nature, meaning it's his nature to exist. He didn't have to be brought into existence. Everything else that exists is dependent. It did not always exist. That means that it does not have absolute truth. It is not an absolute necessity in terms of what is real and what is true. So when we talk about that God is truth, that we say that at the end of the Shema, we mean to say is that God is the only real existence whose existence is not dependent, and that he always existed. That's an important idea to get clear. And Rambam is quoting, Maimonides is quoting the prophet, when the prophet says, God is truth. And then Rambam goes on. He says, Hu levado emes. He explains, God alone, he alone is truth, and there is not to anything else a truth like his truth. There is not to anything else a truth like his truth, meaning to say, like we just stated, that nothing else that exists is as true, meaning as real, as God. Because everything is very contingent. Things come into existence and they vanish. So they don't have what we say is really essential existence. You know, millennia ago, nothing was here. So the essentiality for anything except for God is absent. Things, creation is not essential. So that's what he means in terms of truth. What is actually, but what is true? What's true is what's eternal. So that only applies to God. And he says further, and that's also what the Torah says. And he quotes, he says, Ein od milvado, there is nothing else aside from God. Meaning to say, there's nothing in existence whose truth is true aside from God. So let's think about the two statements that he's quoting. He's quoting the statement from prophets, from the Navi, and he's also saying that, well, that's from some Navi. He says he's quoting two sources. One source is Hashem Elokim Emes, Hashem, our God, is truth, and also there's nothing else besides him. So let's pause for a second and think about what is he trying to get at with this point. What are these two statements he's making? Again, the two statements are one quote that says God is truth, and the other quote is there's nothing else besides him. What's the difference between the two quotes? That's the question now. I see a possibility. You feel free to type it in on the screen. We'll just take a moment and think about the question. And again, Maimonides does not just quote statements for redundancy. I mean, the second quote has to add. That's a Sarah. What you're saying is that his existence is essential as well as his oneness. There is no other. True. That's the facts. Can we distinguish between the two? So what does he mean to point at by making both quotes? Okay, Nolan, what you're saying is that Hashem is truth, and this truth is absolute. Yes. That's what we mean by truth. Truth and absolute are sort of synonymous. The next point he says, Ain old Nevada, there's none other. What does that add? The exclusivity aspect. All right, Sarah, you're asking what is the difference between Hashem's existence and his oneness? I'm asking on why Maimonides is bringing in two statements. That's what I'm asking. That's the question. And again, I just like to note during the class that a lot of times people will come and listen to the recorded form of this class. So if you're listening to this in the recorded form, we do have pauses during the class because it's for the purpose of everybody having a chance to ponder the questions. So those pauses are unfortunately recorded onto the recording. There's nothing we can do about that. So that's just a brief message for those who are listening to this in the recorded format. Okay, Nolan, you're saying there's no other, meaning objective truth. Okay, right, exactly. I mean, no other is in fact a modification of God's truth. No other meaning that exclusive. But see, what I think Maimonides is getting at is that it's really one statement he's making. I'll read it to you again so you can see this whole halacha is only three lines. Let me just see what Sarah's saying. Gene actually says, if this weren't true and God would be limited by time, he wouldn't be infinite. Okay, we're not getting into that here, though, Gene. That's not the point here. It's not the infinite aspect, unless I'm misunderstanding what you're saying. Okay, Sarah, you're saying as follows. Perhaps a person may think Hashem's existence is absolute, but that it is possible that there's also another God whose existence is also absolute. So the Rambam is saying that is not true. Correct. But I believe that they're related statements. Meaning, when the Rambam says that... when he first quotes the statement, Hashem Elokim Emes, God is absolute truth, meaning he is the only thing which has real existence. Everything else is dependent, and therefore everything else came into existence, and that means everything else at one point did not exist. So there was only one thing in existence prior to the universe. All right, that being God. That being the only real existence. But what he means to say by saying that Ein Od Milvado, his second quote, that there is none other than God, he's modifying the previous statement. Meaning, what we mean when we say that he is Emes, he is truth, that by definition must be an exclusivity. That's a statement of exclusivity. Meaning, Ein Od Milvado is not a new second idea that stands alone. The fact that there's none other is a qualification of fact that God is the only true existence. So it's not two different ideas. It's really this concept that God is absolute truth by necessity demands that there's nothing else Meaning, if you say there is one cause, and that's the next idea, the very next idea he gets into is the fact that God is the cause of the world. So it follows. But what he's saying is, if you follow here, he's saying that by definition, once you tell me that there is one single thing in existence that caused the existence of everything else, that means that thing has to be one by nature, not two. To give me this concept that there are two gods, so what are you telling me, that one God didn't always exist alone? That means it always coexisted with another God. That means it's not all-powerful because he didn't create the second God. So the concept of having two gods or more removes the exclusive and unique nature of any of the gods as being completely in control. The complete, exclusive cause for all existence. The only way you can have an exclusive cause for all existence if there's nothing else. That's what exclusive means. So you can't tell me that God is the creator of everything and also tell me at the same time there's another creator. So then God's not the creator of that second God. So you can't have that. So when he says, when the Rambam says that God is the only truth, so what that means by necessity is that there is no other. You can't point to any other cause except for one cause. There can only be one cause for everything. If he's saying that one thing has absolute power and created the universe and gave it all of its laws, so that means there's one cause. That means there can't be anything else. It negates the possibility of there being anything else. Okay, Sarah, good. Glad you got it. All right, Nolan, you got that. Laura, you got that? Okay, let me see what Laura wrote. Laura wrote, no other source nor gods exist except Hashem. Hashem is the only one. Exactly. You see how the Rambam formulates it. It's formulated in that God's truth, that his very definition necessitates the fact that it is exclusive, that there is no other. Okay. It's a nice idea. See, that's where the Rambam now goes into the next halacha, halacha hey. Halacha hey, he says as follows. He says like this. Hamatzoi, this existence, Hazeh, he is the God of the whole world and the master of the land. Okay, I want you to listen carefully in case you don't have the text in front of you. You know, you may want to just jot down the notes. But again, this existence, right, is the God of the world, of the universe, and the master of the land, of earth. And he is the one that guides the spheres with a strength that has no end, below tachlis, and no purpose. Well, it could be end or no tachlis. It doesn't end in terms of quality or quantity. Bekoach, with a force, she'ein lo hefsek, that has no, it doesn't, there's no breach in the force, meaning human force and human strength, or even mechanical strength, there is not a constant thing. The person gets tired and there's a break, or metal parts in the machine break down, they wear out, and they have to be repaired. But in terms of the force that God exerts over the universe, it's not subject to any breach. Nothing can affect him. There can't be any cessation in his continued force of guiding the spheres. He goes on, he says, Shehagilgal Sovet, because the spheres revolve regularly. And this is impossible that they should revolve without something causing it to revolve. All right, so now he's saying that, again, from the beginning of Hey, he says that this creator, this we're referring to God, so he says God, this existence, is the God of the universe and the master of the earth. And he is the one that guides the sphere with a force that has no quantity or quality to it. It's no quantity to it. You can't measure it. And it's with a force that has no break. It doesn't end. There's no breaches in the continued force that God exerts over the sphere to keep it turning. And he says further, because the sphere, either he's talking about the earth or the sun, but he's talking and he's saying that the spheres will revolve regularly. We see that they revolve, the planets or the sun revolve regularly. And it's impossible that they should revolve without something causing it to revolve. I mean, it can't happen of its own accord. And he, blessed be he, is the one that causes the earth to constantly turn without using any hand and without any body. And so it makes it clear that although there's this exertion on the earth and there's a constant guiding force that God has over the spheres, it's not one which is through any type of a physical means. Don't think that since he's causing something physical to be effectuated, that he must use a physical means. For example, we could use an analogy from our own lives. We can do certain things in life, but the origin of those decisions are our mind, our soul. So the physical locomotion of our bodies originates in a metaphysical thought in the soul. Similarly, when God causes the universe to constantly move, or the earth to rotate, he's not physical. God is not physical. Don't make the mistake that because he effectuates a physical earth, that he must in some way be physical. Okay, that's important. But now let's go back to the first statement he makes, and I want you to tell me what's odd about the statement, all right? Time for a question here. I want you to think about the statement. He says as follows. This existence, meaning God, he is the God of the universe and the master of the earth. All right, what's the question? This existence is the God of the universe and the master of the earth. What is your question? All right, let's take a pause and you tell me what the question is. All right, I see Ina, you just logged on. Nice to see you, Ina. Hope everything's going well. We just started, so you really didn't miss anything. Plus, the classes are recorded, so you could listen to them from their in their entirety on the audio files link. In the meantime, the question is, what does Maimonides mean in the beginning of his Laws of the Fundamentals of the Torah, Chapter 1, Law 5, when he says that this existence, meaning God, he is the God of the universe and the master of the earth? Okay. What is the statement there? My pleasure, Ina. Okay, if everybody has the question, just type OK on your screen. Let me get some feedback. Let me know that you have the question clear. Okay, Lee is writing, God of the universe, by definition, must include being master of the earth. So why is the latter phrase necessary? All right, good question, Lee. Nolan, you're writing, difference between God and master. Exactly, right. That was my question. But Lee's question is also very good. Okay, yes, Sarah, exactly. What's the difference between them? So Lee's point is that it sounds redundant. And Nolan's point is that, well, what's the difference in general? Because Lee is saying, once you say the first, he's the God of the universe, so what more are you gaining by saying that he is the master of the earth? And also, what's the difference? What's the difference between God and master? Why are those terms selected by the Rambam? But there is a very good distinction that you can make. I'm just noticing myself right now. What's the difference? If you want to start off, what's the difference between God and the difference between master? Nolan, you're right, in context of science in this time, no. This is not something which is subject to variation with the generations. I believe Rambam is making very accurate use of this distinction. Okay, Lee is writing, very good, that God creates, whereas a master rules. Okay, take it a step further, Lee. Right, this man Lee does not let up, unless Lee is a girl's name. I know that it's could be either. Either way, you're consistently good with those answers, Lee. Appreciate it. Okay, Sarah, I agree also. Lee made a very good distinction. God is something which creates, meaning Elokei. The Rambam use of God is that he creates, and that's in connection with universe. Whereas Rambam says further that God is the master of the earth. Okay, Lee. Thank you. Okay, so now take that first step, Lee, was excellent. Now go a step further. So now, what is the application of God to universe, where he uses the term master over the earth? Everybody think about that. Take a look at Lee's last entry. All right? And you'll see that I think it's a very valid, and that's, you know, should open up the answer to everybody. Okay, so Sarah's writing shows that he has a relationship with man, and Ina is similarly mirroring that sentiment to show that God is still involved with earthly matters. Exactly. True. Meaning a person might think God, like Aristotle, he's at one with the universe, but he doesn't get involved with individuals. So that's false. That's what Aristotle would have to say without prophecy, without knowing, through the word of mouth, that God was involved with and still is involved with man. All right. And Laura is writing, God created and controls the universe, whereas he's master of the world. Okay, elaborate on that, Laura. Lee, you're writing, God, having created the universe, including the earth, now chooses to rule over the earth as its master. Okay, you're using the same word again, Lee. You have to go further. You have to define master. What does he mean by master? So, Lee, that's what Ina was saying. That God is specifically involved with the earth. It's not that he just caused the... See, what is L-O-K, God? God of the universe means what? What's a better word than saying, or what's a definitive explanation when he says God of the universe? There's one word you can say for that, that Rambam is trying to point to. When you say the phrase God of the universe, so what's God's relationship to the universe? One word. What title do you give God of the universe, if you want to define that phrase? One word. One title. One position. Exactly, Lee. Creator. Exactly. So in terms of the universe, you're talking about its existence. So as much as we're referring to God's relationship to the universe, the best definition we can give of the universe is that he's the creator. Okay. Now, therefore, this means, by definition, that he's also the creator of the earth. So if we say he's the master of the earth, that must allude to something else. So that's like what Ina was saying, that God is directly guiding, meaning one thing could be causing the existence, another can be guiding its operation. All right, and this goes back to the main distinction between the two things that God created. God created not only substance, but he created behavior, meaning the laws that govern the substances. So there's matter, there's physical matter, there's created entities, both physical and non-physical, but then there's also the operation of these things. That's the second idea. The second idea is that he's the Adon, that he's the master of the earth. So that's what Rambam is telling you here, very succinctly. Okay, and Lee is writing again. Excuse me. As master, God has a direct involvement with matters on earth. This is a step beyond having created the earth. Exactly. So you can cause the creation of something and then walk away, like a carpenter's relationship to a table that he sells to somebody. He creates the table, sells it, and that's it. He's not involved with the table from that point further. But the Rambam is saying that's not the case here. But that the actual operation is that it should be functioning in a certain manner. Now, what does that tell you? What does it mean that God is involved in the with the operation of the earth? Now take that statement and try to understand it. Why is God involved in the operation of the earth on a daily basis? All right, now that you made the statement, Ina, and Lee, and Nolan, and Laura, and Sarah also. So now that we agree to the distinction that God is the creator of the universe but the master of the earth, so now what is the, can we learn anything more about that? Why God desires that he is now the master of the earth? And again, he substantiates that this is so because you see that the earth can't just turn, it can't just rotate by its own. Okay. All right, Laura is writing, master means he's involved with helping man and woman here on earth. God formulated laws for us to follow. Right, exactly. Lee is writing, it means that God cares. Right. Sarah says, I thought we can't ask why when it comes to Hashem. No, you can ask. I mean, in terms of when it comes to, like, for example, why did he create the universe? That we can't ask. That's just, at a certain point, you get to his will. But we can ask, why did God make man with a soul? I mean, there's many questions we could ask why. Certain areas we can't. But that doesn't apply to everything, Sarah. But we can, again, we could definitely ask, why did God make man with a soul? Well, the answer is because he wants man to be involved in pursuing wisdom. And then you'll ask, well, why does he want man to be involved in pursuing wisdom? I mean, that reasoning, that line of questioning will eventually take you to the point, like Rambam says, that, well, it's just God's will. At a certain point, you get. But at this point, we're not at the wall yet where we just have to say, well, that's God's will. But at this point, we can ask that if God is you know, if Maimonides also is clearly distinguishing between God being the God of the universe and the master of the earth, so we can try to understand that distinction. Okay. But I think that you're all cluing in on that. And then in terms of the God being the master, that he desires, for whatever reason, that man is living a certain type of life. Okay, so that's what we're asking now, Sarah. We're asking, what is the reasoning why God desires to not only be the creator of the universe, but that he should be the Adon, the daily master over the operation of the earth. And the Rambam proves that from the fact that you see that the next statement in that very law is that it's impossible for the earth to turn without there being something turning it. And that, blessed be he, is God. So that just brings, it substantiates, you know, Rambam's earlier point that God is the Adon. And how do we know that he's the Adon? Well, we see that he's constantly involved in causing the earth's rotation, the sphere's rotation. So we see that there is a regular involvement in those things which he created. So you see from the very operation of the universe, even without Torah, even without the prophets and the traditions that were handed down to us, we see just in the way that the world operates that this is something which God desires, because these things can't operate on their own this way. They're brought into existence. There are certain rules that are guiding them. But it must be then that it's a continuous phenomena, a continuous emanation of God's will that this should be this way. Okay, and again, that's why the Rambam says next that it's impossible that the sphere should keep turning. Right? But you see the word regularly. He throws in the word regularly. He says that Gilgal Sovev Tamid, that the earth turns on a regular basis. What is the Rambam pointing to? Regularly? That it's God's will on a regular basis, always. All right, Nolan, you're writing the following. You're saying the Creator must therefore be one and only source of law. No other iterations are valid. True. True. Okay. But you see the Rambam elaborates further. See, there's a tremendous amount to be learned just by very slowly going through, you know, the way he writes. And again, he continues in this law. And he states that there is no break in the force that God exerts on the earth to keep it moving. And he does it without any physical. He has no hand and no body. Because you might think, again, we said this earlier, but to dispel any assumptions that something physical has to be manipulated by another physical thing, the Rambam says, but God does this without a hand, without a body. Do not think that because God effectuates something physical, that God himself partakes of the physical. Okay. So that's two laws we just did. Dalet and Hay. That's number 4 and 5. Okay. Any questions? Let's take a pause and let's see if there's any questions that any of you have at this point. If you have a question, just type it in. Okay, if it's clear, just type in okay. Let me know that the idea is clear. And again, you can always listen to the class afterwards. We post it usually half an hour after the class is over. It will be posted in the audio files link, so you can hear it again. Correct, Nolan. The sphere may right. The Earth may stop at Hashem's will, because that's where its operation is being derived from. All right. Now let's read one more halacha, one more law. Now he goes into the aspect of the Torah command regarding this. Up to this point, he didn't mention. Now he mentions that v'yedias davar zeh, the knowledge of this matter, of God's existence, his exclusivity, that he is the only cause for everything, and that if you extinguished everything in the world, God would still exist unaffected. He says the knowledge of this matter is a positive command, as it states in the Torah, I am God, your God. Right? That's the first of the Ten Commandments. So that is a command. It's not just a statement, but it is an imperative. It's something which is obligatory. We must know this. Okay. So that's the first thing he says in Halacha Vav, in the number 6. And he says, V'chol hamayla adaito, anybody who assumes in his mind that there is another God outside of the true God, he violates a negative command, because it also says in the Torah, quote, you should not have other gods before me. Right, you should not have to yourself other gods before me. So not only must you know that God exists, but you also must exclude the possibility in your mind of any other god. The kofer b'davar zeh, the ikar zeh, excuse me, the kofer the Iker Shezehu, and the person who denies this and thinks that there is another God, he is a denier of the most fundamental concept, because this is the Iker. This is the fundamental, the great fundamental, that all is dependent upon. This is the greatest fundamental that all is dependent upon. And we said at the outset, any knowledge that a person has, he can only have if it culminates in his appreciation for God, and he recognizes that it is created. Because if a person studies any science or any object, but he does not think that this thing is created, then he has the most fundamental error about this object, because the existence of something is its most primary feature. If your knowledge of the existence of something is flawed, so then no correct knowledge about anything else can make up for that. If I think that the whole world existed forever, so I have the completely an irreparable view of the world, because the world's existence is really to point to a creator. That is why God made it, in order to let man have that which with which to study and to realize that there is a creator. So if a person makes the most fundamental error and thinks that something does not have to be caused and it could exist by itself without a God, so that's an irreparable view, and it's something which there's no remedy for unless he corrects that position. But that's what the Rambam is saying over here, that if a person denies the fact that God is the only cause and he thinks there's any other God, so then he denies the most fundamental, which everything else is dependent upon. Okay? So we see it's both a positive command to know that God exists. That means using intelligence, using rational proof. And then the person must also negate the existence of anything else that is the cause of the universe. Okay, so that is something which you have to work on. You have to go through thinking it through yourself, and any questions or doubts that you have, you must be honest about them and confront them and work on them. Sometimes it takes hours of reflection and thinking and just being alone and making sure that you have a pure view. And it's not an easy thing, but it's not nothing really worthwhile comes without effort and patience and diligence. So this is something which is, you see, is a command. It's also not something you can pass up on. This is an obligation. It is a chiyuv. It's an obligation of the Torah. Two obligations, a positive command and a negative command. That's why, you know, I decided this would be a very important topic to take up, because this is the most primary of all knowledge. So we really must think into this matter, and whatever questions we have, we should ask them. How do we know for sure that there's only one God? Whatever the question is, you have to ask it, no matter how silly it is. I mean, that's something which I have to do as well. If I have a question, I go to those greater than me and vocalize it, and regardless of what type of a response I might get, however harsh it might be, however dismissive it might be, that's not the concern. Your concern must be to have clear knowledge about what you know is true. And if something is not clear to your mind, if you can't see it crystal and 100%, that means you have to keep on applying yourself until you get to that point, especially in this area of really knowing God's existence is absolutely true, as much as your friend sitting next to you at work is true. All right? That's how it should be. It should be emotionally convinced that both parts. That's why it says you should love God b'chol levavacha. What do you mean with all of your heart? I mean, you only have one heart. How can you love God with all of your heart? So the rabbis say, with both of your inclinations, with your instincts and with your intelligence, meaning with both halves, both faculties that exist in man, his animalistic side and his intelligence side, both should come together in the realization of God's existence. That means you have to have that emotional conviction too. If you say it with your lips but you don't feel it in your heart, that means there is something blocking your conviction, and then you're not fulfilling the mitzvah properly. So that it's necessary, and simultaneously, even if you admit of God's existence and you see it 100% true, but that is not sufficient. You also must negate the prospect of there being anything else. That is part of what, that's what Maimonides says in the fourth law, in Halacha Daled. Okay. All right, any questions up to this point? If it's clear, just type OK on your screen again. But let's make sure that this is clear over here, that the knowledge of this, this knowledge is a positive command. Like it says, I am Hashem, your God. You see, interesting, the Rambam uses the term God over here. When he talks about knowledge of God, of being the cause, he goes, but he doesn't go to master. He uses now the word God. Why? Because now you're going back to he's the existence, he's cause of the existence. So in terms of having the ultimate definition, so that is that God caused all existences. So that means the role of God. The only thing which you can say is a God is that which gave existence. That is the most, that is the best definition we can give in terms of when we say God, we mean creator, the sole creator. That's why he says the command is in the command of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. But you see, Elokecha means two things also. Not only is he God, but he's your God. What do you think that brings into the equation when God formulated this command and he says, I am Hashem, your God? What does that bring into the equation? You tell me. Okay, Jean, Adam, Lee, Sarah, thank you. Shoshana, Laura, Anna, okay. What do you think we might be able to derive from when it says, I am Hashem, your God? Maybe just wait a moment and see if any of you post anything. If you have any possibility, you know, feel free to type it in. Let me just wait a moment and see. Adam is saying that we need a personal relationship with Hashem. Well, we're not talking about from our perspective. We're talking about why does God formulate in the Torah the command that I am Hashem, your God. See, I believe this is going back to the previous point that God is not... okay, a couple of you just wrote things on. Let me just see. Lee is saying, perhaps it is a statement that God, having created us, is actively involved in our lives. Right, it straddles both. Okay, Gene is saying our subservience. Okay, Nolan is saying God over us individually as well as collectively. Okay, I agree. Shosh is saying he is letting us know he created us and he is our God. Lee is saying that we must obey his commands. Ina is saying God is not exclusive. I don't know what you mean by that. We're saying that God is exclusively our God. What do you mean that God is not exclusive? I'm not clear, Ina. Just spell that out a little bit more. Okay, Ayana is writing, I'm me not excluding. He is our including everyone. Including all people, you mean. Uh-huh. True. I mean, yes. Okay. But I think what he's getting at is that this statement is now straddling both. He is the God of the universe, meaning using the word Elokei, meaning when we say the God, that means the creator, the cause of everything. But Elokecha, your God, that means it tells us two ideas, that he is the cause of everything, but also the one that's involved in us individually. So it's really both ideas. It straddles that we talked about before, that he is not only the God, but he's also the master. So Elokecha brings both of those together when he says, your God. Okay. All right, so I think what we'll do is we'll end at this point, because what he starts with in the next halacha is now going into the fact that God is not two or more. And it's talking about the unity of God. That's a whole new concept. And I mean, we started touching on it already, but there's a lot to be said on that. I particularly want to actually review a couple of the other, the Rishonim, or actually what the Rambam writes as well. Because it does have quite a bit on it in the Mora, so you're welcome to take a look as well in the Guide for the Perplexed, where he talks about it. But that's something which we'll take up in the next class. Let me just see what Laura is saying. Did God mean that he is our creator and father in our lives? We must follow and obey only God. Right. Okay, Laura, correct. Well, there's only one cause for the universe, so there is nothing else to respect. There is nothing else to follow and obey. Everything else are mere imaginations of our minds. Okay. All right, so I think what we'll do is we're going to end the class at this point, unless there's any questions. I see that Gershon just logged on, but we're actually just going to be wrapping up the class now. But again, if any of you came in late or just logged on, you can hear the whole class in about... probably about 15, 20 minutes, it'll be posted on the audio files link. All right, so in terms of when the next class will be, okay, Sarah, my pleasure. Next class, just keep your eyes on the schedule. That has not been decided yet. So if you just look at the schedule, you'll see when the next class will be posted. And again, we'll pick up from this point. And until then... I wish everybody a good day. I'm glad you're able to join, and I hope you're enjoying the classes. And we'll see you the next time that we get together. Okay, so have a good day to everybody. Unless there are any questions, let me just wait a minute to see if there's any questions before we sign off. All right, you have a question on anything that we did, just type it in now. Otherwise, we'll pick it up next time. So let me just give you all a moment. Okay, Shoshana, thank you. Okay, Lee, have a good day too. Thanks for coming on again. And thanks for your input. Always appreciate it. Okay, it doesn't look like there's any questions. Okay, so we'll sign off now. Wish everybody a good day, and just keep your eyes on the schedule. So you'll see where the next class is. Okay, good day to everybody.